Today is July 17th, 1973. The following interview is with Nate Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R, a member of the Domestic Council. The interview will take place in room 233 of the old Executive Office Building. Terry Good will conduct the interview. I think, as I mentioned, the questions that we asked at this point will be very basic, and I'll sit here and just try and take notes so I can keep track of what I've asked and some of your responses. If you want, if you could tell me when you joined the White House staff, approximately?
Approximately late December of 1970.
And your last day on the staff will be, or was?
Will be tomorrow, July 18, 1973.
And for the period of time that you've been here, you have been on the Domestic Council that entire period?
Yes, I've also served as an advance man for the President, the Vice President, and the First Family at various points in time prior to my joining the staff, and also while I did serve on the staff, I also served in that dual capacity.
Were you an advance man during the 68 campaign?
No, during the 1970 congressional campaign.
Did you do anything in the 72 campaign?
Yes and no. Not for the president, but I did some campaign stops for the First Family.
While you were on the Domestic Council, what was your title?
Staff Assistant.
In order to fit you into the Domestic Council organization, could you start with John Ehrlichman and come on down and show me where you fit in?
It's sort of difficult because there are two periods of time here. When I initially joined the Domestic Council staff, it was not organized quite the same way that it came to be organized later on. When I first joined in December 1970, John Ehrlichman was the executive director and assistant to the president for domestic affairs. Ken Cole, of course, was the deputy director of the Domestic Council. Perhaps at that time he was not even the deputy director. I'm not sure. It escapes my mind right now. And at that time there were four or five deputy assistants to the president for domestic affairs. I worked specifically for Ed Morgan. I was brought on in December of 1970 to help work on the State of the Union message for, it'll be the 1971 State of the Union message. And do you want me to go into that, or do you want me to, or would you like
me
to?
Just the organization first, okay. And then go back on some of
the stuff. Okay, I worked under Ed Morgan's aegis until basically the Domestic Council was reorganized, and these deputy assistants to the president also picked up the title of assistant director of the Domestic Council. At that time I went to work for John Evans and continued working for John until his departure from the White House some months ago.
Okay, I'll come back to that in a little while, and maybe we can go into some more detail on that. Let me just knock off some of these other more basic questions. How about the names of secretaries that you had during these two periods?
Well, really, when I worked with Ed Morgan, I didn't really have a secretary of my own. Kay Laycock was in that office. Catherine Laycock, I guess it would be. Margaret Strock was Ed Morgan's secretary. And at one point in that period of time, I was working with Jamie McLean on general revenue sharing, and we shared a secretary, Kathy Fick. And then when I joined John Evans' staff, I did get my own secretary. Her name is Joanne Lashley.
secretaries can do wonders for trying to explain or interpret files or symbols and
indeed.
Codes and initials.
Yes, I know.
And so it's nice to have those names too. In terms of documentation of your activities, without going into too many specifics right now, where would you assume or where would you recommend that we look if we wanted to trace your activities while you've been on the domestic council? Would we find them among the files of John Ehrlichman, Kim Cole, Todd Hullen, or John Campbell? Or?
Well, you would find them. You would find some in John Ehrlichman's files, some in Ken Cole's files, depending upon specific projects I was working on. Some of those projects I would report directly to those individuals. Others would be found in Ed Morgan's files and John Evans' files. And perhaps to some extent, although it would be a very limited extent, Jim Falk's files. Now, a few more would probably be found in Jamie McLean's files because of our long involvement together on revenue sharing and youth.
When we try and contact you again in 5 years to do another series of interviews, how would you suggest we address our correspondence to reach you now? Obviously, if you're like most other people, you're not sure where you'd be 5 years from now, but we've had people give us the names of family, friends, in-laws, professional organizations, alumni associations.
Two good ways. One would be the District of Columbia Bar Association. Rather, the Bar of the District of Columbia, actually, it is now. Most likely, they would have a current address on me, as would the alumni files of the University of Pennsylvania or Georgetown University Law Center. Any of those three would most likely have a current address for me. Of course, you might check Martindale Hubbell Law Directory, probably 5 years from now. Somewhere in there I would be listed as an attorney.
Has any one individual been assigned your responsibilities?
Not any one individual. As a matter of fact, my responsibilities have been divided among various individuals. Do you want their names?
Why don't you? I think we'll probably get back to that when we get into some
okay.
of the projects.
Jim Cavanaugh, Henry Paulson. I think if Dana Mead has anything that I was working on, he might very well. I would say that basically would be it.
Those three individuals. Are there any magazine or newspaper articles that come to mind that touched upon some of the projects or you yourself that you worked on that? I'm thinking now of articles that would be significant in terms of an understanding of what you did that were also fairly accurate. Now, if there were some that were terribly inaccurate that come to mind, we'd like to know those too so we can steer away from those.
Well, there was a National Journal article on both Evans and myself, not per se, but on a project that we happened to be working on and had to do with workman's compensation, and as with National Journal articles, they can be partially accurate and partially inaccurate, but it could give you some idea of what we were doing. Although I must say that the article was not totally accurate. I believe that Evans' quotes in that article were really more accurate than the quotes of the other individuals involved.
Did you do much traveling while you were on the domestic council? We've already mentioned your activities in advance, man, so obviously you traveled there. Strictly speaking, with your domestic council assignments?
No. Very little.
Um, compliance with executive departments and agencies, Capitol Hill or private interest groups, extensive enough or significant enough that you might want to mention those, or would it be better to wait until we get into a discussion of the projects themselves?
I think perhaps it might be best to hold off until we get into a discussion of the project.
Well, with that, then, I'll turn it over to you and you can discuss the projects. As I mentioned to you on the phone, I'll be more than happy to sit here until we run out of tape. On the other hand, in all fairness to you, you might just want to limit yourself to a brief mention of these projects, the people you worked on, both within the domestic council and the departments and agencies, and then go on. Otherwise, I know this thing could drag on and on.
Okay, as I said earlier, I came here in December of 1970 really to begin work on the State of the Union message. At that time, the State of the Union message put forward, of course, what the president called his new federalism, the various revenue sharing proposals, welfare reform, executive reorganization. Initially, I touched on all of them to some extent. I more or less was Ed Morgan's assistant for a period of time. And then it became apparent that they needed someone to work specifically in the area of general revenue sharing. Jamie McLean and myself were really chosen to shepherd the general revenue sharing from its State of the Union inception pretty much through to its completion and passage and signature by the president. During that period of time, we met rather extensively with governors, mayors, county officials, state legislators, congressmen, senators. We worked very closely with Bob Strauss, who was a Brookings Fellow on assignment to the Treasury Department. We worked with Murray Weidenbaum, who at that time was the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, now professor at I believe it's Washington University, St. Louis. Jim Smith at Treasury, who was the Congressional Relations Man. I guess he's now the Deputy Undersecretary or Deputy Secretary. I can't recall which. Then, of course, here we work with our own Congressional Relations staff. We went through the General Revenue Sharing Bill day after day for, I would say, a period of a year and a half. I worked almost exclusively on general revenue sharing. I knew the hour bill, the various bills that were proposed by other congressmen and senators, the problems that we had with the Ways and Means Committee, Chairman Mills' absolute objection to the bill in the very beginning, to the point in time when we finally hammered out a formula that would be agreeable to all. I must admit that, I guess perhaps because I lived so close to the bill for such a long period of time, I was actually disappointed in the bill that finally came out. I always felt that the bill that the president put forward to the Congress originally was a much superior bill and would have had a greater impact on the central cities and the poorer areas of the United States than it than the bill we actually came out with. But the legislative process being what it is, I guess you have to accept sometimes a half a loaf rather than none. But that really consumed almost the first year and a half on the staff. And during the course of that year and a half, towards the end, we saw that revenue sharing was winding down and there seemed to be a void in terms of the representation of youth. There didn't really seem to be a particular spokesman. Bob Finch, who had been more or less the man assigned to deal with youth when he first came over to the White House from HEW, got more involved in other projects for the president, and there seemed to be a void. So McLean and I managed to pick up the responsibility for being the White House liaison with various youth organizations. What we basically did was to identify who represents and who speaks for youth, whether it's the Boy Scouts or vocational education organizations or things like the Student American Medical Association or the Student American Law American Bar Association, organizations such as that. We invited these individuals in, met with them, let them know the president's interest in youth, and afforded them an opportunity to channel their views on particular subjects of interest to youth in order that the voice of youth would be heard in the decision-making councils of the White House. That was really our basic function with youth. We did put together a number of schedule proposals whereby the president met with various youth groups. First Family spoke at some of their conventions and really made them feel, with the passage of the, was it 26th Amendment or 27th, I can't even recall now, that gave the 18-year-olds the right to vote, it also afforded them a voice in the White House. I'm happy to see that with the changeover in administration, with Mrs. Armstrong and her people, that this work is being carried on and that youth is still represented. It obviously is a major segment of our population, especially voting population. They really have a right there. They are an interest group, like really any other interest group, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the AFL-CIO. Youth is really, has this right to be heard. That would sort of take us to, the late summer, early fall of 1972, it couldn't be that. Must have been before that. Maybe it was in the summer of, well, I guess it would have been the fall, the winter of 71, I guess. Probably be about the timing is when I really started to, when I switched over to John Evans. He asked me to come with him. This is about the time when the assistant directors were named. He was named an assistant director of the Domestic Council. John asked me to join his staff, and since we had gotten the youth activity well underway, and it seemed to be going on without any problems, I felt that I could also carry on his workload. And I guess it must have been the winter of 71, 72 is when I joined John Evans' staff. John, of course, had, as all assistant directors, had really a list of projects and departments and agencies that he was responsible for as the primary domestic council liaison. What John did was basically to divide up his list between myself and Jim Falk and himself, and we each took a number of programs and agencies that we would individually be responsible for, and we would, of course, keep each other informed as to what was going on. Some of the things that I worked on during that period of time would be the economy. At that time, unemployment was a major problem. We were well above 5%. One of the things that I did was to put forth a monthly bulletin for Mr. Ehrlichman to identify exactly what the unemployment or employment picture for the preceding month looked like. This way, what we would do would be to try and identify pockets of unemployment and try and get to the cause of it. We would explore this with the Labor Department, the Commerce Department, and any other department or agency that might be able to give us some input. Try and identify exactly what the difficulty was, whether it would be in Riverside, San Bernardino, California, whether it would be an aerospace problem there, or in Detroit, is it because it's a model changeover time, things such as this, and then we would try and coordinate the activities of the departments and agencies to reduce unemployment in that particular area, to try and get to the root cause and see if we can't take some positive corrective action. That might come in the form of Emergency Employment Act funds or the various programs that were available through perhaps the Agriculture Department or the Labor Department or the Commerce Department that would get to this type of unemployment. At that time, we were also working on a larger picture, and that was the manpower revenue sharing proposal, a proposal that we felt would get to the cause of some of this continuing unemployment, especially on among the young minority groups and workers who had been displaced. We worked that legislation over and over. We just had a lot of difficulty with the Congress, and that legislation really has never gone anywhere. A concomitant to that legislation was a program I worked on with the United States Office of Education, Department of HEW, and that program was career education. It was mentioned in the President's 1972 State of the Union message. It's really not vocational education, but it's an opportunity for every young person to receive at least a saleable education by the time he leaves high school. Yet those people who would be able, willing, or desirous of continuing their education with an advanced degree would not be prohibited from doing so. Yet if in the course of pursuing their advanced degree they decided to drop out of school, they would still have some sort of vocational or occupational training from their high school years. Of course, during this period of time, this worked in very well with some of the youth organizations that I was still representing, because some of them, like the Future Farmers of America, the Future Homemakers, Future Business Leaders, and so on, they all were very interested in career education, and it gave me an opportunity to represent youth in two areas, both in the White House with as their spokesman, so to speak, and also in terms of helping to fashion programs that might be of significant benefit to youth in the future. As I said earlier, I did work with workman's compensation and also occupational safety and health. These are two areas that sort of go together. They were in the Labor Department in terms of occupational safety and health, but it was more of a liaison role. Actually, both of those, just making sure that the President's programs or his philosophy in terms of these programs were being carried out by the Labor Department. Excuse me if I slip around here. I'm trying to.
That's all right. You're doing far better than a lot of people.
In terms of employment or unemployment, a subsidiary part of that, I just noticed here, was the Jobs for Veterans program. This is we got together really the National Alliance of Businessmen and really got them behind the whole concept of helping the returning Vietnam era veteran. We found that by looking at our unemployment data, found that these returning Vietnam veterans were running an unemployment rate that was really astronomical. It was above 10% for the longest time, and the President set a goal of reducing their unemployment to that that would be equal to non-veterans in the same age group. This, we're talking basically 18 to 29, I would say. And as a matter of fact, we were very successful not only in reducing the national unemployment below 2.5 or below 5%, but we were also very successful in reducing the unemployment rate for returning Vietnam era veterans significantly in the range of 8 or 9%. As a matter of fact, we reduced it from above 10 down to that 5 to 6%, at least equal to the to their non-veteran counterparts. One of the one program that took quite a bit of my time was the program of high concern of the presidents, and that was the Office of Minority Business Enterprise of the U.S. Department of Commerce. The president always felt that minority groups, if they were ever to enter the mainstream of American life, could do it successfully through entrepreneurship. To that end, the president established the Office of Minority Business Enterprise and saw to it that it was heavily funded. The idea being here to single out minorities, whether they be black, Spanish-speaking, Asian American, so forth, and assist them in establishing their own businesses and also their own regional organizations to help other minority entrepreneurs become established. This program, I served as the domestic council liaison, but the entire White House liaison for the Office of Minority Business Enterprise. This consumed a tremendous amount of time, and we worked very, very closely in cooperation with the Small Business Administration at the same time. This Small Business Administration administers the set-aside contracting program for minorities, and what we really attempted to do was to make sure that minority contractors, minority entrepreneurs got a very fair shake when it came to dealing with the federal government.
Did you work with Bob Brown and his staff in
yes.
this area?
Yes, I did. I worked with Bob Brown very extensively, and also with Bill Marumoto, who really represented the Asian and Spanish-speaking people in the White House. Of course, during this period of time, with all of these programs, I assisted in drafting various legislation, the Minority Enterprise Small Business Investment Corporation amendments to the Small Business Administration Act, various drafts of the manpower revenue sharing bills I went over. Various executive orders dealing with creation of the National Commission on Workmen's Compensation and various responses of the president in terms of signing particular legislation, whether it was the Black Lung legislation or extensions of workmen's compensation legislation. Terry, I think that, believe it or not, that
I've got some questions
that
now.
covers the basic work that I did here, the various programs. I guess I have left out one thing. I'm sorry. Yeah, I did work with the Veterans Administration also, working on their various programs.
I would assume that when you mentioned
yes.
the veterans programs,
yes,
as far as jobs for veterans.
That did slip my mind. Although the Jobs for Veterans was not really run out of the Veterans Administration, believe it or not, it was actually an interagency task force, the Labor Department, the Veterans Administration, the Defense Department. We called upon the resources of all of those various organizations to deal with veterans unemployment. I think we have a very good record there, and it's a program that still continues with the job fairs that are being held literally monthly throughout the United States to assist returning veterans and not only returning veterans, but all veterans in obtaining employment.
All of this work that you've been involved in strikes me as requiring a certain amount of legal expertise. Was this one of the reasons why you were brought on the staff, is because you do have the legal background, or was that just one of many skills that you brought
I think that was one skill that they were looking for, not from a purely legal standpoint, although I think that my training as a lawyer enables me to approach problems and reach solutions in a rather logical way, and I think that the president being a lawyer and many of his principal aides on the staff being lawyers, they might have an inclination towards lawyers. They're also looking for people that they felt could do a job well and quickly. Sort of a can-do attitude, I think, and perhaps my experience as an advance man had demonstrated my abilities in that respect. But I think the combination of the two is probably what caused them to ask me to join the staff.
How did they come to find you, and who was it that actually talked to you about joining the staff?
It was Ed Morgan. I was recommended by Ron Walker, who at that time was in charge of the advance office. Apparently Ed mentioned to him that he was looking for some additional people to join the domestic council staff at this time at State of the Union, which was really a large State of the Union message. It was tremendous in terms of its impact on the government, and not only the federal government, but state and local government. And he needed some people, and Ron Walker recommended me for that position. I interviewed with Ed, and he invited me to join the staff.
How did you and Ron Walker come to meet?
Through another advance man who I had practiced law with prior. He recommended me to Ron as a possible advance man. And
who was that?
Mike Duval.
Where are you going now when you leave here?
I'm going to the Department of Commerce to be the Special Assistant to the Undersecretary.
Are you from around this area, Nate?
No, from the Pittsburgh area, a small town in Pennsylvania, about 40 miles from Pittsburgh.
These topics that you've mentioned that you worked on do seem to interrelate very closely: the economy, youth,
yes,
unemployment.
To a large extent, Terry, I would say that this really was the, with the exception of health, per se, this would be a human resources type of assignment. You see, we're into unemployment, minority enterprise, veterans problems, education, so forth. That would particularly a human resources sort of assignment.
These topics, were you working closely with John Evans during
yes.
all the time, or was it pretty much one of those situations where he said, Nate, that's yours?
Well, let me put it this way. I would have my list of programs, and I would be responsible for them on a daily operational basis. I would do my own thing, so to speak. If I felt that I was at a policy or decision-making point that I should not be making, then I would move to the next step and talk to John about it. If John, of course, felt that the decision should be Ken Cole's or Mr. Ehrlichman's, of course, an appropriate briefing paper would be put together and we would await the decision from the appropriate individual. But in terms of daily operations and most decisions, I called my own shots. It was take it and run. Evans would say, I've got 25 different things to do. I can't do every single one of them every single day. You're just going to have to take yours and handle them. And whenever you feel that we have to get together, we'll get together. And on a weekly basis, Falk Evans and I always sat down and reviewed everything so that we were all totally aware of what each other man was doing, just in case of sickness or vacation, so that there would always be somebody around to fill in for the other fellow when they were out of town or sick.
So we could perhaps come back to you and not only talk to you about the specific projects that you were involved in, but also those that fell to John Evans and Jim Falk. At least you could shed some additional light.
Oh yes, I could shed some additional light, and likewise they could definitely shed additional light on what I was doing. I doubt if I could get into the real details. For instance, Jim Falk worked very, very heavily on welfare reform. I definitely couldn't get into the details of what he did, but, you know, in terms of a basic idea of what was going on most of the time, that I could, you know, that I could give you.
To what degree would you suggest that we can find documentation of your activity? Would you say your activity was documented to 50% of what you did, 25%? The reason we ask this is that if we know ahead of time that there's going to be very little documentation of your activities, then we're not disappointed, we're not surprised, we're not misled by what we find.
Well, a lot of my work was submerged, shall we say. McLean and I, for instance, would sit down and jointly work out problems. We might sit together for a few hours at a time, drafting, redrafting, and the work would go out perhaps under McLean's signature in a memo form or something to that effect. You might not, and you wouldn't see my name, yet to a large extent, his work product was my work product because we just were there together doing the same thing at all times. And that's largely true, I would say, with Evans as well. You probably won't find a tremendous volume of memos to people other than, let's say, John Evans or Jamie McLean from me. You may find a few to other people, but the bulk of my work would be directed to those individuals. They would incorporate it and do their own memo to somebody else based on my work product.
Then we could assume anytime we came across a memo within the domestic council files, and perhaps with regardless of whose name might appear on it, that if it had anything to do with the topics that you've mentioned, we could probably assume that a good portion of that memo was your doing.
If it had to do with general revenue sharing, you can assume that. If it came from Evans, let's say, on one of these subjects. If someone else on the domestic council was writing a memo on one of these subjects for whatever reason, you couldn't assume that I had anything to do with it. But only as it relates to Evans, or Fall, or McLean, I think that you'd be very safe on there to assume that I had a large input into whatever came out of their came out under their signature.
Did you send a lot of letters or correspond a lot with the private interest groups? And you mentioned your youth activities, your veterans activities, your minority business enterprise activities. Would we expect to find a lot of correspondence with these groups in the files?
Yes, you'll find a fairly significant amount there. And also in terms of veterans, you'll find some veterans correspondence as well. You will find letters to private individuals and also to organizations.
Would it be fair to assume that if we found correspondence that was signed by Evans or other members of the domestic council on these topics, that you perhaps might have drafted the letter?
Very, very possibly. Very possibly.
Would that show up in the carbon copy of the files with your initials on it?
Might not show up with my initials on it. Depends who the typist was. Although you'll find that most of those letters actually went out under my own signature.
Did you maintain a cron file of your own memos and letters?
Yes, I hope so. Yes.
Will that go to Craig Gosden or somebody? Or
copy of my cron file will be. See those three? They're listed. No, they're all. It's all in here. Done online.
Could we get a copy of all of that for our files, or are you going to give that to Craig or somebody?
Central
files. You're going to send that down to central files.
Yes, right? I'm going to affix these. I presume I'm supposed to affix these to the boxes and send them down. Would you like a copy of it?
That might be helpful for our files, maybe. It'll eventually come to us.
I'm sure it will.
It'd be nice to have in our files so that when we get around to preparing for another interview with you or, other, let's say, Jim Falk or John Evans, if we could just glance through that list of things, it'd be a nice refresher for us on
sure.
what you've done.
It's no problem. I've got extra copies. I'd be happy to give it to you.
I'm tickled you've got a cron file, because that, you should probably know better than I do, is a wonderful means of quickly discovering what a person did, what he said, what he wrote, what he was involved in. You mentioned that your areas of responsibility are being divided up between Jim Cavanaugh, Henry Paulson, and maybe Dana Mead. Could you very briefly say which activities went to which individual?
Let me put it this way. They were going to these people. I can only speak to a certain period of time here. God, I sound like, you know. When the president announced the various counselors to the president, they were counselors for particular reasons and for particular areas. And these had basically to do with the executive reorganization of the government. So where you had Jim Lynn as the counselor for community development, you had Mr. Weinberger as counselor for human resources, and so on and so forth. So you'll find that Jim Cavanaugh really picked up the bulk of my material, because most of what I was doing was within that human resources area. Now, I do understand that Henry Paulson has the Small Business Administration and perhaps the Office of Minority Business Enterprise, although I can't be sure of that. I can't be sure of that at all. But I know he has the Small Business Administration. Now, I'm not sure whether Dana Mead has any of this.
But he might.
But he might, because he had been involved very heavily. He might have career education. That would probably be the only thing he would have, although I'm not sure he does have it. See, Dana originally had a responsibility for desegregation and also emergency school aid and secondary and higher education. Now, I don't know whether he's retained any of those educational functions in his new position, but if he has, he might have career education. Of course, Jim Cavanaugh is the liaison with the Veterans Administration, and he's the principal liaison with HEW, but that's mainly been more in the health area. But I assume that he also, since he was really with natural resources, must have manpower problems, unemployment, occupational safety and health, and workman's compensation, those various things.
Touching very briefly on your activities as an advanced man, would you have been working with Bill Kotus during the 70 campaign in his role as kind of supervisor for some of the advanced work for the First Family?
I worked the First Family before Bill Kotus joined the staff. When I was doing the advanced work, it wasn't really in the heat of the campaign. It was
much
unquestionably campaign advancing, but it was prior to the time that Kotus joined the staff.
So you'd have been working with Ron Walker then for that period of time, for the most part?
Well, actually, during the campaign, I didn't do any advancing.
Well,
I was it was all prior to that, and prior to that, it was with Ron Walker.
So we might find some memos and other documents among the Ron Walker files.
Yes, I would assume so, because we were always required when we were advancing for the president to submit a trip report after each after the conclusion of each event. Now, my comments might have been incorporated in somebody else, such might have been Faust or Dewey Clower or Duval or someone else. I don't know. You know, I would submit my report to them, and I don't know whether mine was appended as to theirs or incorporated within theirs. So. That I can't answer.
Would we find a copy in your cron files, perhaps, of any of the members
No.
who wrote on that?
No, because they just, no, those wouldn't be there. That was because they were always written out in hand and sent up to them. That was at a time when I didn't have a secretary.
And that would have been the only time that you really did any extensive traveling during the advanced man.
Yes, I did do a few speaking engagements on revenue sharing shortly after the State of the Union message, but they were very, very few. Nothing extensive, 3 or 4 trips perhaps.
Well, that touch is made on the things that we like to ask at this point. If you see any holes in the questions I've asked that you want to fill, by all means, go right ahead. But we found over a period of time going through these seem to be the basic questions that elicit the type of responses that we're looking for at this point. And,
okay.
I'm sure that
after we get through your cron files at some point in the future, we'll be able to come back to you.